Hello and welcome to Teen Scientist. I'm your host, Raina Malhotra, and doing our audio engineering today is James Ziprout. Here on the show, I bring you all stories of innovation and excellence in the STEM disciplines entirely from a youth perspective. I feature young researchers and respected experts in their fields from the local to international levels to inspire the next generation of scientists to learn from their journeys. In the studio with me today is a special guest and friend that I've made over the years from competing in science fairs. Joining us in the studio is Grace Jacob, a young researcher from right here in Pennsylvania. How are you, Grace?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well, and thank you for joining us. So you're in person. You're about an hour away from here, right?
Yes. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And how was that drive coming over? Everything all good?
Yes, very good. I saw a few cows and a few horses. So that was nice.
And just diving right into questions, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, so my name is Grace Jacob. I'm 17 years old, and I'm currently a junior at the Academy of Notre Dame, Dan Amour, in Villanova, Pennsylvania. I really love science, and I love mint chocolate chip ice cream.
And so for our listeners, Grace and I actually do know each other quite a bit. We both went to the International Science and Engineering Fair both last year and the year before that, and we competed at the regional Delaware Valley Science Fair. Are you planning on doing that again this year?
Yes, I can't wait to go there and see everyone.
So could you give us a brief overview of what your research project was all about?
Yeah, so my research project both last year and this year aimed to explore the potential of mesenchymal stem cells in mitigating the effects of celiac disease. I use in vivo and in vitro studies to fully allow myself to have a comprehensive understanding of my potential therapeutic effects. The choice to focus on celiac disease stemmed from my own diagnosis back in 2022. Celiac disease is an autoimmune disease induced by the intake of a protein called alpha-gliadin, which is found in wheat, barley, rye, and malt, or gluten. Witnessing firsthand the challenges and the impact of celiac disease motivated me to research and find a cure or a therapy for celiac disease. All the existing literature that I read pointed to therapeutic potentials of mesenchymal stem cells, so I included them in my project. By including all of these different aspects, I really want to gain insight into the mechanisms underlying these therapies and its efficiency in addressing the pathological processes associated with celiac disease.
So have you been doing research for a while now, or was this kind of your first time getting into a lab setting?
This is my first time in a total lab setting. My first year, which was when I was a freshman, I conducted research on lung diseases, and doing that, I used a sort of sensor that would test for different levels of VOCs within someone's breath to see if they had emphysema or lung cancer. But this is my first real big kid scientific work.
And then did you do science fairs a lot in like middle school and elementary school too?
Yes, actually I had one on teeth too, where I used real live teeth and put them in different liquids to see what would happen to the enamel. And I've also done some engineering projects like solar panel cars.
That's really cool. So I'm asking that because it seems like you kind of worked your way up to like the more serious stuff.
Yes.
With like real applications. You mentioned that you chose celiac disease because of your own condition, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you just walk us through your diagnosis, if that's fine, and how exactly you found out and what your kind of reaction to that whole situation was?
Yes. So my journey to celiac disease was a challenging one. It was a lot of frustrating symptoms and a lot of tests. Celiac disease is a genetic disorder, and as my dad has it, I've had numerous blood tests specifically for the disease itself, and they all came back negative. But I was experiencing a range of symptoms, including chronic diarrhea, constipation, gas, nausea, rashes, and severe cramps, and these would hurt so much that I'd go to the doctor around maybe two times a month just to see, can you please help me get these symptoms away? And they went from telling me I was just stressed to it was the detergent with my skin to telling me that maybe it's a possibility that I will have a disease that will affect me for the rest of my life. So on June 10th, 2022, after having these symptoms for over 5 years, I decided to go in for a biopsy or a small sample taken from my small intestine. 4 days later, I was definitely diagnosed with celiac disease, and I also got the diagnosis of lactose intolerance. And what I didn't realize at the time was that people with celiac disease get lactose intolerance because lactase, the enzyme that breaks down lactose, is produced in the same villi that's damaged by celiac disease. So that was a pretty interesting correlation. Not quite interesting for me because I really like ice cream, but on the science aspect, it was very interesting. But the diagnosis was a big, big relief, and it was such a pivotal moment in managing my health and dietary needs as well as starting my project.
So you mentioned it took years for them to finally come to that conclusion. Was that frustrating for you to kind of like not have a kind of conclusive answer to everything that was going on to you?
Yes. Typically, and unfortunately, in the medical field, a lot of girls at a young age who go in for medical screenings or just yearly checkups, when they tell their doctor their problems, most of the time they're told it's just menstruation cramps or something to do with their cycle, or it's just anxiety. So hearing all of that and knowing that it was something deeper, it was really frustrating. But celiac disease does show itself as a number of gastrointestinal diseases, as some people that I know who have celiac disease first get diagnosed with Crohn's and then they get celiac disease, because it masks itself as so many other diseases that you just really can't tell.
Yeah, definitely. I think it speaks volumes to like our healthcare system still now and how it treats certain, you know, women in it. I definitely think that's an important message. Has it been difficult for you to adapt in terms of like your lifestyle, your diet since that diagnosis?
Yeah, well, it affects me both socially, mentally, and physically. Socially, I have to plan ahead for meals. I have to check if restaurants can accommodate to my dietary needs. Eating at friends' house is incredibly difficult. Mentally, the cost of vigilance is completely draining. And physically, if I get gluten in my system, it leads to brain fog, decreased cognitive function, and I just kind of lay around for a few days. Adapting to life with celiac disease hasn't been easy, but I'm fortunate to have a good support network. My parents have gone above and beyond to find safe food for me, gluten-free food, paying triple the price of normal croissants or bread to just make sure I have something to eat. Definitely having celiac disease, you need a support system to help guide and alleviate all of this stress that comes with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you saying all this now, I'm getting like a flashback to when we were traveling to ISAC and you came into the airport with like a suitcase full of bread.
Yes.
Loaves of bread. So I think that's crazy that you were just responsible for carrying around your own bread.
It's definitely something. I have safe snacks everywhere.
That's really important. Now, transitioning on to the research side of this, can you explain the rationale behind choosing mesenchymal stem cells derived from human deciduous teeth for this therapy?
The choice to use mesenchymal stem cells derived from two aspects, the scientific and the personal. First, the scientific was because stem cells hold immense potential and promise due to their ability to differentiate into various stem cells, offering diverse therapeutic applications. Human deciduous teeth are also known as baby teeth, and they present an ideal source for isolating stem cells. They're found in the pulp of the tooth. When you lose your teeth, it's the red part in the inside. So these teeth are naturally shed during childhood, making them readily available without any invasive procedures. Additionally, the accessibility and abundance of these teeth make them very attractive. The personal factor is from my sister. She still retains her baby teeth and has a genetic predisposition, just like me, for celiac disease. So to advance this therapy to clinical trials, it will take a long time, and hopefully I could use her teeth for isolating mesenchymal stem cells to use my future cure on her once I obtain clinical approval so that she wouldn't have to go through the same struggles that I do.
That's amazing, and I appreciate you kind of explaining that both personal and scientific reasoning there. How did you ensure the efficacy and safety of the mesenchymal stem cell therapy in your entire experimental setup?
Yes, so to ensure the safety of these mesenchymal stem cells, we had monitoring protocols. For example, the mice that we used in our procedures were carefully observed to ensure their safety throughout the entire study duration. My mentor, Dr. Chider Chen, he adhered strictly to the Institutional Animal Care and Use Committee in his lab, which includes regular checks for any signs of tumors or abnormal growth. The welfare of the mice was prioritized, and measures were taken to minimize any potential pain. These practices were essential in maintaining the validity of our experimental results as well as the ethics behind it.
And then can you walk through the specifics of your entire experimental procedure and the infusion of mesenchymal stem cells and then the subsequent measurements that you took?
Yes. So first, I injected B6 mice with alpha-glidian, the protein that I talked about earlier. And after a while, I isolated the memory T cells that responded once I fed these mice with gluten. And once I took those memory T cells, I injected them into three groups of five RAG1 mice. And the first group out of the three served as the control, and it maintained a gluten-free diet to simulate the body's response in celiac disease without gluten consumption, while the second group followed a gluten diet to mimic the effects of consuming gluten with celiac disease. The third group was infused with mesenchymal stem cells and had a gluten diet so that we could see the true potential of the mesenchymal stem cells. All of the stem cells were administered through the anus to ensure direct delivery of the affected area. And throughout the study, we, of course, carefully monitored the mice, and we harvested our samples on the 28th day, and conducted statistical analysis. We just aimed to gain insights on the efficiency of mesenchymal stem cells therapy before moving on with this project.
And so you just described a pretty elaborate and detailed experimental procedure. How did you plan that out before you even went into this? Was this something that you kind of researched beforehand? You collaborated with other mentors? How did you plan that out so detailed?
First was Dr. Chen. His lab work is strictly on mesenchymal stem cells, which was quite interesting because once I was referred to him and I had my paper of all my past literature that I was reading on, his name was one of the most prominent names in it, so it's kind of like I was working with a celebrity. But other than that, it was a lot of research. It was quite difficult to have the research as there's very limiting research, first of all, on celiac disease and on mesenchymal stem cells with the addition of celiac disease. As especially in America, celiac disease, they don't quite want to find a cure for it, as the FDA allows 40 parts per million of gluten to be found in gluten-free food. And if I pick up a random product at the store, they say, oh, it's gluten-free, but the company itself doesn't have to test for gluten. So there could be gluten in the product without me knowing.
So a lot of like hidden kind of ingredients.
Yeah, hidden ingredients. And not to mention the crazy amounts of payment that you have to give just for diagnosing yourself in the first place.
Yeah, definitely. What were the specific disease scores that you used to assess the damage done by gliadin?
Alpha gliadin.
Yeah, and in the mice. And how were these scores determined?
Yeah, so I have 2 years for this project. Last year, I explained a little bit before with the infusion of the memory T cells and all of that. So how I did it is I first looked at crypt diameter scores, a villi over crypt ratio, and then an immune cell infiltration. So, for example, the crypt diameter score, I had 4 scores. First was score 0, score 1, score 2, and score 3. Score 0 would have a less than 0.5 micrometer diameter, while score 3 would have a 2 micrometer diameter. So this is a system that's typically used in literature and at UPenn, which was where the lab I worked at was. Last year, the crypts and the disease scores and the immune cell infiltration all had low effects or normal crypts or a very small crypt diameter for my gluten-free diet group. And this just showed that they were absorbing nutrients at a good length and that all of their intestinal tissue was intact, while my gluten group would have very severe destruction. And we saw that through histological scores that I took. Additionally, we would see that the gluten and mesenchymal stem cell group, they would have a kind of in-between. While this year, I wanted to see why it worked last year. So we figured this out by seeing that mesenchymal stem cells expressed something called PDL1, or programmed death ligand. And we wanted to see, once they connect with the mesenchymal stem cells, do they cause T-cell apoptosis? And what is the effect on the therapeutic capabilities? So once again, I used the same scores and saw that PDL1 is expressed within mesenchymal stem cells. And when we removed the PDL1 through targeting the RNA, we saw a severe decrease in the T-cell apoptosis that we found.
What antibody assays were employed to evaluate the immune response to the mice, and how did you kind of conduct those?
So last year I worked with ELISAs, which are enzyme-linked immunoadsorbent assays, and serum antibodies. So these are just trying to find any inflammatory cytokines that are present or any anti-inflammatory antibodies. So the more, for example, inflammatory cytokines I have, the more inflammation is in the body. So I know that the therapeutic approach isn't doing what it's supposed to do. So for example, I would see that the gluten-free diet would have a low amount of this interferon gamma, which is a pro-inflammatory cytokine. And I would know that it's not reacting because there's nothing to react with because they're not eating gluten. This year, I'm conducting flow cytometries and MTT assays, which show the expression or viability of whatever I decided to test at that moment. For example, I decided to use flow cytometries to detect T-cell apoptosis or cell death, and I used MTT assays to show the viability of my mesenchymal stem cells. So I just used all of these statistical analysis to show me that PDL1 is present within the T-cells and the mesenchymal stem cell, and it does cause T-cell apoptosis. But because I use the MTT assay, I can also see that it also decreases the mesenchymal stem cell viability within the body.
Yeah, that really makes sense. I appreciate how so much effort and lots of detail going into like those steps and those analysis. As much as I do want to keep learning about your work, we do need to pause for a short break. But when we return, we'll continue discussing your recent project and some advice that you may have for our listeners. You're listening to Teen Scientist on WDIY.
For program support, we thank Lehigh Valley Style, the magazine the Valley lives by, celebrating the people, places, and things unique to our region. Subscribe today or view the digital edition online at lehighvalleystyle.com.
Welcome back to Teen Scientist. I'm Raina Malhotra, your host this evening, and with me I have Grace Jacob, a young researcher from right here in Pennsylvania. We were just speaking about her research on celiac disease and the experimental methods that she used, and now I just want to dive right back into it with you, Grace. Can you elaborate on the statistical analysis performed, particularly on the ANOVA analysis and how it supported your hypothesis?
Yes, so I elaborated on most of the past statistical analysis in the previous question, but for the ANOVA analysis, ANOVA is essentially an analysis of variance. It's a statistical test that compares the averages of three or more groups to determine if significant differences exist between the groups, or p-values. The ANOVA conducted showed that the first two interleukins that I used, which is IL-17A and IFNY, which is interleukin-17A and interferon gamma, were statistically significant from other groups with a p-value of less than 0.005 or a probability of happening it by chance 0.005. And I saw no significance between the groups for my last group, which was IL-10. And interleukin-10 is a cytokine that maintains homeostasis, so I'm quite glad that they all came back similar.
And did you observe any adverse effects or complications associated with the introduction of mesenchymal stem cells in your experimental groups?
No adverse effects were observed. Throughout the study, the mice were closely monitored for any signs of severe adverse effects to ensure their well-being and safety. The absence of adverse reactions is encouraging and suggests the potential safety and success of using these mesenchymal stem cells for the treatment of celiac disease.
And then more generally, were there any really unexpected challenges or outcomes that you encounter during the course of the experiment in general?
Yeah, specifically this year, we encountered an unexpected challenge when one of the mice in our groups actually became pregnant. So this unforeseen event led to a decrease in our sample size as the pregnancy skewed some of the analysis. Despite our meticulous planning, such unexpected occurrences underscore the importance of flexibility and adaptability in such research endeavors. Although I would really love to start to do research on the effects of pregnancy on celiac disease, as this mouse behaved differently and had increasingly or decreasingly different results in their analysis from the other mice.
That's a really interesting kind of like serendipitous thing to happen.
Yes.
That gives you like another place to go with your research. That's
most
really cool.
Definitely.
How do you envision translating the success observed in the mouse model to potential therapies for patients with celiac disease in clinical settings?
Well, by the time I get into clinical settings, it will be hopefully several years down the road. As of now, I can only envision translating the success based off past literature and past success stories. So one approach that I've been considering is administering abdominal injections with increased PD-L1 so that the T cells die even more once a month until the villi in the small intestine are fully regenerated from the damage. And once the villi are restored, I envision using solely mesenchymal stem cell treatment on an annual basis to maintain gut health and prevent further damage. I just really wish to address the root cause of celiac disease while providing the long-term therapeutic benefits for patients.
And then how do you plan to further validate and refine this therapy before potential clinical trials, as you just mentioned? I know this is your second year, so it's kind of a continuation project. Do you plan on doing like a third or fourth year or carrying on with this work as you go into college?
Yes, of course. As Marie Antoinette said, let them eat cake, and I would really love to eat a good slice of cake. So in order to do that, I'll need some significant research, such as expanding my studies with these mice, increasing my sample size, conducting longer-term observations, perhaps exploring effects in other animal models that are similar to the human genome, such as pigs. Human studies are envisioned several years down the road, so this stretch allows me to thoroughly assess the therapy's safety and efficiency through the rigorous preclinical research.
And before you kind of get to that point, are there any major limitations that kind of concern you to the current study that need to be addressed first?
Yes, the small sample size. I have 6 mice in each group this year, and I had 5 mice in each group last year, so my N value is quite low, which can limit the generalizability of the findings, as well as the duration of the study. Each mice was only tested for 28 days before harvesting and euthanization. Other potential limitations involve potential biases of the sex of the mice. I didn't separate the mice based off sex. It was just whatever they had. Any other confounding impact factors that might have impacted the interpretation of my results. So addressing all of these limitations would be essential for advancing my understanding and optimizing the effect and success of my research.
Yeah, definitely. What are the most promising avenues for future research in the field of mesenchymal stem cell therapy for autoimmune diseases in general, like celiac disease?
So this is actually one of the questions that I always get asked, regardless of what competition I go to. One of the most promising avenues for future research in the field of mesenchymal stem cells are in the ability to regenerate damaged cells with the minimal risk of rejection. Stem cell treatments offer a unique approach wherein the body recognizes these cells as self, minimizing the risk of adverse effects. Unlike traditional medications, stem cell therapy produces a potential solution with fewer side effects and risks. These innovative approaches opens up new possibilities for treating autoimmune conditions, especially those with limited medication options like celiac disease, where current treatments mainly focus on dietary restrictions like a gluten-free diet. By harnessing the regenerative property of stem cells, we have the opportunity to revolutionize the treatment landscape for autoimmune diseases, providing hope for improved outcomes and quality of life for patients.
Wow. Well, I now want to transition a little bit from that kind of nitty-gritty of the research to more how you kind of landed this position and your research journey in general. So can you talk about how you started working at UPenn as a sophomore in high school, which is impressive in itself, and what kind of compelled you to do that?
Yes. So I took the initiative myself a couple weeks after my diagnosis. I was not going to do work on celiac disease until I got it myself. And I reached out to the UPenn Medical Center as they have a celiac disease program. And they referred me to Dr. Chider Chen at UPenn's dental school. Dr. Chen has been so instrumental in guiding and mentoring my projects. He has offered me the most invaluable advice on experimental design and protocols and how to handle myself as a scientist. He has generously provided access to his lab and resources, particularly for handling the mice, as I cannot handle the mice yet, fortunately. But overall, Dr. Chen has been such a great help. Landing the position in the lab was difficult as I got many different rejections from other places, as who honestly would allow a 15-year-old kid to just come in and work in their lab on a disease that they're not gonna really have much background knowledge on. So I'm just really thankful.
Yeah, definitely. And what would you say is one of the more valuable lessons that you've learned kind of going from those smaller, more surface level middle school projects to this more like robust and time consuming commitment now in high school?
So one of the most valuable lessons I've learned in my science and my research is to never give up, even when faced with crazy challenges or setbacks. Science can be incredibly messy, but all data is valuable in advancing knowledge. Persistence is key, and I've come to appreciate the importance of collaboration and the support of fellow quote-unquote nerds who bring diverse perspectives and expertise to the table.
Were you ever intimidated by a certain scientific topic? You kind of just seemed to dive into this research with celiac disease right after your diagnosis with kind of no major kind of concerns or hesitations. So I'm curious, is that kind of how you usually operate even in academic settings, or was this kind of a one-time thing?
Yes, there's a Russian proverb that says, "My eyes are scared, but my hands are doing." So I kind of operate on that type of motto. I was initially intimidated by the topic of celiac disease because there's limiting existing research, and diving into the area felt very, very daunting, but I overcame the hesitation by just approaching the topic with curiosity and a willingness to learn. I saw all of the guidance from my mentors, and I just kept on reading available literature. Over time, my initial hesitation did become a driving force behind my research endeavors. Overall, I would just say go for it.
I love it. Just go for it. Now, outside of all the research, what do you like to do in your free time just for fun? Can you talk a little bit about your hobbies or kind of clubs or organizations that you're a part of?
Yes. So outside of my research, I stay engaged in various activities. I serve as the treasurer for my Armenian Church Youth Organization of America in the chapter in Philadelphia. where I contribute to fundraising efforts, community initiatives, and other events. Additionally, I tutor children in piano and academics. It is so much fun. I love seeing them grow. Other than that, I'm an avid reader. Lessons in Chemistry is my most recent favorite book. I absolutely adore the main character. I also participate in Model UN as a leader in my school, where I engage in debates and discussions on global issues. I've been to Model UN conferences at Harvard and recently in Rome, where I also won Outstanding Delegate. And these activities not only provide me with fulfillment and enjoyment, but they also enrich my perspective and skills beyond the realm of science.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say it's very diverse. You kind of see a lot of different fields coming together to kind of make Grace's life together, because people, a lot of kind of stereotype, I guess, kids that are more inclined in science to only do science things, like mm-hmm. even beyond their research. So I think it's cool to hear that you're so involved even kind of outside of that STEM sphere. How do you manage your time between academics, research, hobbies, and social life, and also just like your mental well-being? Like, how do you balance it all?
Yeah, so I view scientific research as a break from school, and I see playing piano as a break from research, and I see my friends and my family as a break from playing the piano or Model UN. So it's all about how I choose to spend my time. I'm truly passionate about everything I do, and I find joy and fulfillment in each activity. So time management comes quite naturally, but what I like to do is after I come back from school, I like to take an hour and a half to play Just Dance or hang out with my sister, and then I go back to studying. Sometimes a little break's all you need.
What year of Just Dance do you play?
2014.
Oh, I'm a wait, is that Just Dance 4? Me and my sister are always big fans of that.
Mm.
That's like our OG.
I like the Rasputin dance.
Oh, that's a classic. You can't go wrong. What advice would you give to young students that are interested in pursuing a career in biomedical engineering or translational medicine?
Yeah, find something that you're truly passionate about to research. Having genuine interest in your work makes even the most tedious tasks more engaging and fulfilling. I would have never thought I would come this far. I would never thought I would have won third internationally for translational medicine. But just go for it. Like, don't hesitate to reach out to any professionals in the field for guidance and support. Most, such as my mentor, Dr. Chider Chen, and my science fair advisor at my school, Ms. Jessica Reed, are incredibly, like, willing to offer advice and assistance. If someone doesn't respond, just keep reaching out till you find the support that you need. If you have that dream, go for it.
Absolutely. Now, as we start wrapping up, I want to kind of get a little look about what your plans are for the future. So you're a junior now. Where are you looking at for careers or colleges, stuff that you want to do in the coming years?
For colleges, I'm looking in places in the Boston area and Philadelphia, as I love the history there and the environment. Career-wise, we will see, but I'm definitely looking into something in medicine or scientific work. It just depends on really what school I get into, as each school has its own different program that I'm looking into.
So are you hoping to go into medicine, like go into like surgery, or you know what I mean? Or
yeah,
do you want
to
go
hoping to become a neurosurgeon so that I can inject these same stem cells into a specific nerve called the vagus nerve. I love it. Oh my God, it's the 10th cranial nerve. And it connects the gut and the brain. It's called the gut-brain axis. So I want to see, as celiac disease causes different diseases in the neurological aspect of the body, such as Parkinson's and Alzheimer's or dementia, could I inject it within that nerve and have it target both neurological diseases as well as the gastrointestinal effects of celiac disease?
That's amazing. Those are really ambitious, but I feel like I could totally see you doing it. Can you talk a little bit about kind of the support system that you mentioned? Like, kind of said that you couldn't have done a lot of the stuff that you did without that help and guidance. How do you ensure that you're like reaching out and making sure that you're getting help, both like academically in the research setting or like at home? How would you kind of advise our listeners to make sure that they're getting that guidance that they need?
Firstly, if you want to get a specific sort of guidance, you have to figure out what type of guidance you need. For example, there's some people I know from the science fair who require no guidance in the scientific aspect, but in like the writing aspect for writing their papers. For me, I knew that the guidance that I needed was in the lab because I needed the mice. So I focused on that. And I just sent out emails or called specific institutions. Once again, don't be scared. The worst that they can say is no. They're not going to tell you that you're terrible. They're not going to tell you that you suck. And you take that no and you move on to the next person. And maybe that person's going to say yes, and it'll be greater than whatever was at the last place.
Yeah, absolutely. I think research in general is very multifaceted, as you mentioned before. So, like, there's the writing, there's the communication of it, the posters. I think I've met so many people that have amazing research, but they struggle with just being able to put it on a board or put it in writing. So I appreciate that you mentioned that, because there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that people don't even think about in terms of the entire research process. Lastly, where can our listeners go to learn more about you and your work?
You can learn more about me and my work by visiting my LinkedIn page, as that's the only place I have right now. Additionally, I'm planning to submit my initial draft to a journal this summer for my research. You can learn more about that and more detailed information on my research once it gets published. Just feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn for any updates on my progress and any future endeavors.
Amazing. And congratulations on that publication. Thank you so much for joining us this evening and sharing your amazing work with us. I've learned so much from you today, and I can't wait to see the great things that you do in the future.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in tonight on WDIY's Teen Scientist. I'm Raina Malhotra, and I'll see you next time.
If you enjoyed this program, please go to WDIY.org or the WDIY app to share or become a WDIY member.